Hello, everyone. Thanks. Welcome. Glad you could join us today. Really appreciate it. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to today's event, a live stream of Ask the Compliance Expert. For those of you who are familiar with it, Ask the Compliance Expert is a regular podcast that I publish here on AccountsRecovery.net with John Bedard. And we have John and a couple of special guests with us here today. To try and answer some of the many questions in today's collection industry that we are all struggling to sort of figure out what we can and what we can't do. So I'm glad we have Tim Haig from State Collection Service and Lauren Valenzuela from Performant Corp, along with John, to answer your questions. But working remotely, teleworking, and tackling any legal or compliance questions as well about how to operate in what I guess we'll call this new environment. This event is being sponsored by VOAPS. You'll get a chance to hear from them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick second and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, publishes a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars and events like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. John Bedard is a nationally recognized authority on the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act and the Fair Credit Reporting Act. He serves as counsel to several professional trade associations, including the Georgia Collectors Association. John is a former member of the board of directors of the industry's leading professional trade organization, ACA International. He serves as the State of Georgia Compliance Chairperson for ACA International and is a former chairperson and program designation award recipient of ACA International's Member Attorney Program. Tim Haig is the president of State Collection Service. He joined the company, which was founded by his grandfather in 2009. Over the past several years, Tim has played a key role in State Collection Service's exceptional growth. During this tenure, the company expanded into two new locations, grown its staff by more than 300%, and continued garnering national attention as a receivables company of choice for major healthcare systems throughout the United States. Tim holds a business management degree from Northern Michigan University. Lauren Valenzuela is compliance counsel at Performant Recovery, where she advises on compliance with consumer protection laws, government regulation, licensing, litigation defense, and transactional matters. Prior to joining Performant, she was general counsel and director of compliance for Collection Technology Incorporated. The format for today's webinar is very much an interactive one. We're encouraging everybody to submit questions or comments, and you can do so through the Q&A button on your Zoom webinar control panel or through the chat box in Zoom, or you can click on the Zoom the button in Zoom to raise your hand, and when it's your turn, I will unmute your line, allow you to ask your question live to our panelists if you prefer that way. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available hopefully later today or certainly over the weekend on AccountsRecovery.net. I also want to ask, there's a lot of people registered for today's event. If for any reason we get kicked off, please use the same credentials to log back in. Finally, before I bring on our panelists, I want to remind everybody that they should consult with their attorney or legal counsel before making any decisions. Anything discussed today should not be taken or construed as legal advice. All right, John, Tim, and Lauren, I think we're ready to get started. John, before as we wait for someone to ask our first question, do you want to kick us off maybe and give us a few comments about sort of where we are and what people should be aware of today, Friday, because it seems to change minute by minute?
Thank you, Mike, and I'm delighted to be here with you today. Yes, things are changing very rapidly. We are seeing states actually take action to shut down business, or at least to either order it or to recommend that businesses now take a step back because of this pandemic. We're seeing it happen in California. We're seeing it happen in Nevada. We're seeing it happen in Pennsylvania. More states are expected to come forward and issue guidance on their expectation that businesses are going to either close or curtail their business operations significantly moving forward as a result. I think what is happening is government is trying to quell the spread of this virus. And the way it spreads is when people contact each other. They come into contact. And so all of the places in which people can actually commune and come into contact with each other is what they're really trying to, you know, avoid and shut down. And it's happening daily, on a daily basis. We hear new news. Just today, the city that I live in, the mayor yesterday issued a declaration shutting down all public places. And so it is all in an effort to prevent the spread. I don't know if you can see here or not. I've got my own hand sanitizer here that every once in a while, you know, I'm just doing it. I never did it before, but, you know, every once in a while now I'm just doing it to try and be smart, to try and be safe, and to hopefully nip this thing in the bud so that in 10 days, 12 days, 15 days, we can all get back to normal. You know, I'm not a Pollyanna about all this. This is having a dramatic effect, not just on our industry, but across industries. But I remain hopeful. I remain very positive about how we're all going to come out of this okay. And we're all going to be just fine. That's sort of my take on it, at least at this very moment.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for that. A reminder to everybody, if you have a question about how you should be working, what you should be doing, what decisions you should be making, if there's any information you're looking for, you know, where John got his hand sanitizer, you know, perhaps maybe at what store has it in stock today. I don't know. Ask your question. This is an opportunity for everybody here to share information and to come together and get that. Because that seems to be the most important commodity these days is information. This is your chance. So while we wait and see if anybody else wants to ask a question, Tim, since you're up on my screen, maybe talk a little bit about how your company has been dealing with this and what your approach has been.
Yeah, well, I'll start by saying when I was asked to do this, and the legal expert, I wrote back to Mike, that's not my expertise. So once he said John's on, I said, okay, no problem, I'm in. So to John's point, a lot of good points. It's, you know, it's not just impacting us, it's impacting everybody. And I would really hope, I know you mentioned 10, 12, 15 days. Man, would that be beautiful if we were back to normal in 15 days. The stance that I took with our team here is kind of took the extreme, and I think it's better to be prepared for the worst. And so, I think last week is when it kind of started. We started getting communication out, and then over the weekend is where it really blew up. And, Tuesday I came in and met with our entire leadership staff and said, here's what we're going to plan on. We're going to plan on that. There's a chance that by Monday, next Monday morning or this coming Monday, the entire country is going to be on lockdown. What can we do? And didn't want to panic everybody, but just want to make sure this is a realistic thing. And, we live here in the state of Wisconsin. And in Wisconsin, people tend to really like their taverns. And a week ago, I told our CFO and our administrative assistant, I said, I'll take this really serious if they can get the state of Wisconsin to close down bars and restaurants. And sure thing they did. So we're taking it very serious here. What we've done is we've always kind of been ahead of the game. About 3-4 years ago, we started a work from home project. And so we've had, before this happened, we probably had 60 or about 10% of our company reps working remotely. Admin staff, we probably had 20 to 30. Obviously, many of us have the ability to. I still have not chosen to. I want to be in the office and with the staff. But we've deployed additional people. We're waiting for equipment. Headsets, USB headsets are really tough to get. And they're a different type than we use in our office today. And we also went out and ordered more PCs. Those did get delivered, but we can't work without the headsets. So we're hoping Monday to have a bunch of those to deploy. And we're going to be working all weekend long to get these computers and these PCs ready to go. So our hope is by, you know, midweek or end of week next week that we'll have over 75% of our staff working remotely. Internally, I think we've done a good job. We have four locations. So we were able to, if we have an outbreak in one location, we could transfer calls to those other ones. I've made very clear that we're not planning to close any of the offices. We do have staff that don't have the availability to have Wi-Fi access. We have staff that have said, I would much rather be here in the office. I feel safer in the office than I do at home. And I thought, well, either that or they have a lot of kids at home they don't want to deal with, or they have a spouse that they don't want to deal with. So I was thanking the Staples delivery guy yesterday, and he looked at me and he said, hey, you don't have to thank me. If I'm not doing this, I'm stuck home with my wife. And I thought that was kind of funny. But we've put a travel ban for all staff. No inter-office travel, doing daily communications multiple times a day, using a video conferencing, but also video emails to make sure that staff understands what we're doing and just over-communicating with staff.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you. We've now got a bunch of questions that have come in, but before we get to those, Lauren, I'll give you a chance to share any thoughts and or changes or decisions that you've made at your company so far.
Oh, sure. So at Performant, we have a large group of collectors that are still working in the office. However, we are quickly figuring out how we can deploy groups of employees to work remotely. So this is radically different than anything that I thought we would have entertained, say, 3 months ago. But we're, you know, in doing that, you really have to consider so many moving factors, such as, you know, will your client allow your collectors to work at home? You know, what licensing requirements do you have to navigate? Do you have the equipment in order that, you know, the equipment and technical and system support to allow that to be done. So we were not like Tim. We weren't ahead of the curve. We didn't have any collectors working remotely, but we are rapidly figuring out how we can deploy as many collectors as we can to work remote. So this is a challenging time, but with great challenge brings lots of opportunity. It's forcing us to think differently. And to act differently, and I think that's a positive thing. So we're putting all the mechanisms in place in order to do this compliantly, securely, in a way that really mitigates the risk. So that takes a lot of thought and planning, and I'm happy to be here to share with our colleagues in the industry about our experiences, as I'm sure we're kind of all in this together.
Awesome. That's well put. We've got a bunch of questions that have come in. I'm going to try and sort of categorize these and through them. There's been a couple of questions, John and Lauren, I'm imagining that Tim will defer to you on these, asking about specific changes in New York, Nevada, California, Pennsylvania, either with the prohibitions on what can or can't be collected, what can and can't stay open, whether collection agencies fall under non-life essential or critical industry exemptions. Is there any insights that either one of you can share on either of those fronts?
Sure. So I guess I'll start with, I could start with Nevada. So many collection agencies, I imagine, including Performant, received a letter from Nevada asking, recommending that collection essentially suspend. Obviously, we don't have any physical presence in Nevada, and so there was a little bit of confusion whether or not that meant to stop, you know, all collection activities if you were working outside of Nevada, but just calling into Nevada. So, long story short, after careful deliberation, we decided to take a conservative approach and just kind of honor what was going on for Nevada residents and say, hey, we're not going to make any outbound calls to Nevada people for 30 days. We will continue to allow accounts in current repayment to keep going. We have some federal student loans. We didn't want to mess up anybody's rehabilitation programs or efforts that they're trying to trying to achieve. So that's how we, as a company, kind of approached Nevada. In terms of California, we have our headquarters in California. We have offices in various states throughout the United States. So we're having to kind of deal with a lot of local, county, state, and then federal updates in multiple locations in the United States. We have our headquarters in California, so it's been quite an experience trying to navigate, and actually our headquarters is in the Bay Area, so we had to earlier on this week navigate that shelter in place order from for Alameda County where we were at, and carefully review that order. How we have adapted to that is we essentially quickly adjusted and allowed as many employees at our headquarters as possible to work remote. And the order did allow for certain essential business functions. They called it minimal business operations, minimal basic operations. They provide an exception for that. And that is people literally like processing payroll, opening incoming mail, very, very limited amount of staff that we allow just out of basic necessity to go into the office. But we have that, it's a very strict list that we have. And that is how we are approaching that. When California came out with the statewide mandate, we are carefully studying that, waiting for further guidance. But luckily, given the nature of some of the work that we do for a lot of federal and state clients that we collect for, I believe will fall under the federal critical infrastructure section, specifically the one for financial, the one for financial services. So we've got a little bit of, we got a little bit of wiggle room there, but we're being very cautious with how we kind of exercise that exception under the California's order.
So Mike, you have on accountsrecovery.net a portion of your site dedicated to sort of all of this virus stuff, don't you?
Yes.
And underneath that section of the website, all of the people on this call can go and find the Pennsylvania order, the Nevada order, the California order, the New York order. And so that your site is a really good site to find all of this information. So the person who asked this question about what does California require, what does Pennsylvania require, it's all right there. These orders are in plain English, and they're only about one page long. And so you can read them very easily. You can understand exactly what these states are doing. Like Lauren said, you know, some governors are using language like recommend, other governors are ordering shutdown, and so the language in them is a little bit different, but all of those resources are available on accountsrecovery.net, which is where I have gone to get my own copies of some of this stuff, and so continue to use that site as a resource, because Mike continues to put all of that information on the website so that everybody on this call can benefit from it.
Awesome, excellent, thank you. We've got a question about working from home. We got a series of questions about working from home. For example, what do you do when you have an employee working from home, but there's someone else living in that same area who may be a former employee, or you know, how do you deal with sort of caller ID issues or third party disclosures if someone's standing over the collector's shoulder? So maybe you could walk through some of the how agency should handle some of the logistics if they're having collectors work from home.
Yeah, I'll jump into that. We created what I feel is a pretty strong policy. We do background checks. We also ask who else is in that home. We can't necessarily go and do a background check on that person, but we can. We are all healthcare, so we can run them through the Medicare. There's a Medicare site that you can run through to see if there's any fraud that's been done in the past through Medicare or insurance. I think we also, in our policy, we don't allow for people to be caring for children while in the home too. We also have a thing with pets. We've had one incident where we had a dog barking in the background. The patient was kind of confused what was going on. The rep did an outstanding job and said, you know, we get to bring our pets to work once in a while. And that's what it was. But we do, you know, and obviously all of our clients have to approve that we are able to have agents working from home. And, you know, in this past week, the ones that didn't now are racing and wanting us to get them up and up to speed as fast as possible. I think the other thing that has helped us is we've also been on speech analytics, and in fact, a live version of speech analytics. So it's no different than, you know, we have remote supervisors today that are watching all those remote staff, and they have the ability to listen in on those calls live, real time, but they can also be alerted at any time that there's a use of risk language or if some compliance language was missed. And so they can either jump into that call or they can whisper into the earpiece of that remote rep and to be able to manage that. We also, majority of all of our agents started in the office. So when they leave, they're actually, you know, we have a benchmark of what they were doing in the office, and we actually expect an increase of that productivity.
Oh, Tim, something happened to your sound.
Oh. Yeah, we there you go.
Can you hear? Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you.
Okay. Well, I didn't touch anything, so sorry. But yeah, so we're looking for additional productivity for those people. And if they decrease in productivity, they will be asked to come back into the office. We've, knock on wood, we've never had any security issues. The devices that they have in their home are their our units and their mini PCs. The USBs on those are locked down. They have no print capacity. And they're dialing in through our VPN, through our firewall. So all of that security is done through us, and that's monitored. So, you know, for the last 4 years, we've never had an issue from that standpoint.
I would add to that, if people are looking to figure out how to deploy a remote workforce, meaning, you know, let people work from home, one thing that has been very helpful is creating a questionnaire for our employees to complete. That questionnaire helps us figure out if that employee is a candidate to work from home. For example, you have to really consider whether or not that employee has internet, whether that internet is fast enough for what you need. You have to figure out, like you said, if there are children in the household, if there are other considerations. And so deploying a questionnaire could be really helpful in quickly gathering the information that you need to figure out, is this employee a candidate for work from home? I would say also, there are obviously a lot of concerns about security and privacy and making sure our policies and procedures that we follow in the office are followed at home. And so imperative to that is making sure that you've got a really good teleworking agreement for your employees. And in that teleworking agreement, you can make sure that you put in there very clearly what the expectations are and what the rules are for working at home. So for example, in our teleworking agreement, we put in there very specific guidance, such as, you know, when you designate a workspace at home, it needs to be in a secure location. It needs to be in a place away from others in the household so that consumer and or company confidential information is not seen or overheard by others in the household. We also put things in there based off of the guidance that we have received from some regulators saying that work from home is okay, such as, and this is obvious, but it's good to always put these kind of things in the teleworking agreement as well. But also put in there things like, hey, you can't conduct in-person collections. You can't use your personal cell phone or home phone or address when you're conducting, you know, work at home. Another thing that we put in there was you can't photograph, no selfies of your screens or your workspace while you're working at home. So as you're thinking through how to deploy this, that teleworking agreement and the policy that you should have as well could be very useful in making sure employees have clear understanding about your expectations and about their expectations when they're working at home as well.
It's funny that you have to say no selfies with your computer screen, you know, the things you never think you're going to have to think of.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing that we do have in that policy, just like you said, is we actually have them take a picture of the area that they're going to be working in, their desk space, making sure it's not just set up next to the TV in the living room, something like that, that it's a separate office or a separate secured area. And then the other thing is we do have the right at any time to come into their home and inspect that area. That, again, has sometimes deterred people from wanting to go remote because they don't want to have a surprise of myself or a supervisor or manager knocking at the door and wanting to walk in and see their messy house. But the best part about remote workers is we do an annual survey and they all say that their work environment is the best. So when they talk about the office temperature might not be the best or the cleanliness might not be the best, they all happen to mark, you know, a 10 out of 10 when it comes to temperature and the cleanliness of their own homes.
That's always good. All right. Let's see. Let's move on. Another question here. Where did it go? Here it is. We do not have an IVR, and in order to remain PCI compliant, anyone working remotely has transferred a consumer to a rep inside our physical location to take any credit or debit card payments. Is there a workaround if 100% of our staff is working remotely? Does anyone have any insight on that?
That's what I was going to say, John. If you have a website, make, you know, stir the consumers to make the actual payment through there. Maybe stay on the phone with them and walk them through it, but have them actually do it through your website if you have that availability.
I do like that idea where, so let me ask, I guess, the both of you, do you allow your remote workforce to accept payments over the phone, or do you require your remote workforce to direct consumers either to an IVR or to a website?
We do take payment over the phone. It's redacted as they're typing it into the system. And so they can't see it once they type it in there. And that's the approach that we've taken.
Mm-hmm. So we're still navigating this ourselves, but we feel fairly comfortable. We have a similar PCI controls in place as Tim does, where, you know, the information is pretty much like automatically encrypted as soon as it's put into the system.
So do either of your policies and procedures explain to your remote workforce your expectation that they not be writing that information down in their
absolutely.
Remote offices?
Yep. Clean desk policy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do either of
you
use cameras in those remote places? I've heard of agencies actually putting cameras, just very much like this webcam we have on our own PCs now. Do you either of you use those?
No.
No, not yet. Yeah. We don't, but for those that have laptops, we do communicate, you know, via Microsoft Teams with remote staff, so you have that more in-person feeling, but not from a security standpoint.
All right, excellent. I'm going to jump in here quick for a second. What I'd like to do is just hit a pause button on our discussion, and I'd like to bring in Todd Santa Maria from VoApps, which is sponsoring today's webinar, to say a few words. Todd?
Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate the discussion. We're happy to be sponsoring this, contributing to a lot of people getting information. It's changing by the day and by the hour, frankly. I'd be listening if I wasn't on the, you know, if it wasn't sponsoring. I thought maybe that I could chime in and say direct drop voicemail would be a good way to drive inbound calls, reduce the number of outbound calls you have. You have lower staff in the office or people working remotely. I'm not even worried about that anymore. We have been trying to tell our clients about alternative ways that they can use our service right now, because it is just a communication tool for getting a message out to a wide audience. I will just quickly use this platform to get the word out. We have budgeted to donate 1 million messages for groups in need of getting the word out, whether that's schools, government agencies, healthcare groups, anyone that needs to distribute information to people that need to have it right now. Please encourage them to come find us on our website, voapps.com/corona-messaging. They can sign up and we'll set them up to do that. So thank you very much, Mike, and all the panelists. We're excited to be here and learn more, and we'll be watching very closely what happens. If we can help in any way, let me know.
Yeah. Hey, Todd, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I've been, you know, we are a customer of VoApps and have been for a long time. I'm very happy with that. But seeing those emails this past week from you and your staff talking about donating, and even if we as an agency need some of those to reach out to our staff or even our staff's family, has been just outstanding. We actually talked about that yesterday as a leadership group and are thinking about taking you up on that offer. Or at least having the ability to do that if some big time news comes out over the weekend or even in the evening hours, that we can get that to them. So currently we don't have that. I know there's some other companies out there, vendors that are offering their free services too, like that. And that's just great. So thank you very much for that, Todd. And great. And now is really a good time. We have been using more VoApps in this past week, as you said, just because we have less staff, obviously, and need to focus on those inbound calls.
Cool.
So thank you.
Appreciate it. It's catching steam. We've helped a couple food banks now, a nonprofit in Memphis, a church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and people are starting to take us up on it. We're excited about that. Try to help.
Great.
Excellent. Thank you, Todd. Thanks again to VoApps for sponsoring today's event. I don't like to call it a webinar because we can see a lot of people. I want to get to our next question. It's unfortunately not a bad news type situation, but I know you all aren't employment lawyers. However, any advice you can provide to small businesses who are having to lay off employees would be much appreciated. Does anyone have any insight they want to share about that process?
You know, one thing that I would encourage small businesses to think about is perhaps explore reducing hours before doing a complete layoff. So for example, maybe instead of having 4 employees that work 40 hours each, you have 4 employees that work, 30 hours or 25 hours each, in order to allow as many people as possible to remain employed during this time. Also look into state programs that might be available. For example, I know California, Oregon, I believe possibly Texas and some other states have programs where if you have a reduction in hours at work, the employee can still apply for some unemployment insurance benefits to supplement that last income. So definitely look at what kind of programs your existing programs has that might allow you to reduce hours. I know in California they call it a work share program, which is an alternative to layoff. So definitely explore that, and also hopefully we'll see some relief, some other type of COVID-19 relief specifically. That we can, that our employees can take advantage of. But that's what I would encourage small businesses to do, is to just explore maybe reducing hours across the board rather than doing a full layoff and then seeing what state programs are available to help the employees recover any lost income.
Two other things to keep be mindful of is that 100 employees is a threshold beyond which there are some additional rules about layoffs. And so there's some, I'm by no means an employment lawyer, but there's the WARN Act, WARN, that begins to affect employers with 100 employees or more. And so make sure you're sensitive to that and the rules that you have to follow if you're laying off and your company is that large. The other thing is be sensitive when you're reducing hours like that, because there are many insurance programs that require a certain, you know, like health insurance, group plans, things like that, 401k plans that actually have minimum hour thresholds that in order to qualify for coverage or qualify for participation, you've got to have so many hours. And so be sensitive to those hour requirements too when you're adjusting hours to make sure you're not unknowingly causing somebody to be ineligible for those insurance or programs. The next thing that I share with clients is your own Department of Labor, your state's Department of Labor website has an enormous amount of information that can help you with the kind of programs Lauren's talking about, with lots of other programs that your state might have, to give employers guidance on what to be doing and how to be doing it, especially in crisis times like this. And so there's a lot of information out there for people that are interested in learning more about what to do and how to do it.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you for that information. A reminder to everybody, if you have a question, put it into the Q&A window on your Zoom Remote Control Panel. Send it through the chat. Send a carrier pigeon, however you want to get it to us. And we've got about 20 minutes or so left and to take some questions. We have another one that's come in here. I lost it. There it is. Have we heard anything from licensing agencies about renewals? If they are closed and a company renewal is due, does anyone know if there will be a grace period?
I've not seen anything from a state on renewals. No. Have you guys?
I have not.
My recommendation would be to submit your renewal just like you always would, document the fact that you've submitted the renewal. And that's all you can do, right? I mean, that's all you can do right now is follow the rules that exist. I mean, to the extent nobody's at the agency to accept it is a different question than whether or not you did everything that you were supposed to do under the rules governing renewals.
I agree.
Another question, if you have collectors working from home, do they need to disclose that to people when they're on the phone with consumers or individuals, or should they disclose that?
So I'm not aware of any requirement that says that they have to disclose that. John or Tim, are you guys aware of any requirement?
No.
No. I mean, the state of Wisconsin, that's where majority of our staff is located. They never used to allow it. And we pushed for it about 4 years ago. And when I was testifying, one of the representatives said, well, my wife has done medical coding for like 30 years, and that's always been done from home. And so I think that was one of the things, is because HIPAA was a big piece of this and a lot of these questions that people are asking just overall about security, but knowing that there's been a lot of work from home type work in not just in our industry but in the call center industry too. So I think that's we don't feel that we need to tell people that.
You just need people who are quick thinkers when the dog barks.
That's right.
John, a question that's come in specifically for you. What about the discussion at the federal level to stall debt collection for 120 days?
Yeah. So here's my thought on it. Stopping communications between debt collectors and consumers right now, I think is the wrong thing to do. Now, the content of that communication is subject to a bit of disagreement. But nonetheless, these consumers have legitimate financial distress right now. The truth is, the fact is that their debt is not going to go away, right? I mean, if we kick the debt can down the road 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, it's just going to grow. And so stopping all communication with debt collectors, I don't think is the right thing to do. In fact, debt collectors are uniquely positioned to help consumers today in ways that are better than almost anybody else in the credit cycle. And so I like the idea of more communication. The difference is the content of that communication, right? I like the idea of debt collectors offering sympathy, offering empathy, offering solutions, offering understanding, offering financial education and help to consumers at this time, right? And so a different kind of outbound call I propose making versus our traditional way of handling things. I'm very concerned about lawmakers unfairly characterizing the behavior that our industry takes in the next several days as being more of the same, warranting the kind of thing that we have been fearing for many years, which is just sort of a shutdown, right? We don't want lawmakers to be shutting down debt collectors. In fact, debt collectors are uniquely positioned to provide the most help to consumers at this very moment. And I hope that lawmakers understand that this industry can touch millions of consumers every day. And if we change slightly the way we touch them, we can do an enormous amount of good for consumers right now. And we must not forget that. And we have to make sure that the people who make the rules understand that.
That's a great point, John. Excellently put. I would add to that, that this time, it is our opportunity during this time to change the perception about debt collection. And I would just reiterate and emphasize how important it is to make sure our collectors are trained and reminded to exercise their empathy, exercise their diplomacy skills. This is an opportunity for us to change the perception about debt collection in the industry. You know, and another thing I would just add to what you said, John, also is that, you know, if debt collection is prohibited during this time, I mean, that's going to set a whole new message, a different type of message to the American people. And I'm not sure if that's really the message that we want to be sending right now. And I hope our lawmakers are thinking about that in the sense of, you know, we're part of the normalcy. and so this is an interesting time, and hopefully our industry can rally together and just really change the perception and show, like, just like you said, Sean, we're really uniquely positioned to help out right now.
Yeah. I mean, this is our opportunity to shine, this industry, right? You know, how we behave in the next 30 days, I think will have long-term lasting effect on the perception of our industry in the marketplace. And this is a real opportunity for us to change and perhaps even reverse decades of negative perception of our industry. We can do an enormous amount of good for consumers right now, just like Tim described his company is doing, and that you guys are doing right now, Lauren, at Performant, by implementing remote workforces, reaching out to consumers, and doing what we do best, which is listening, which is helping, which is offering solutions, which is educating, right? That's what we do best. That's our skill set. We can do it millions upon millions of times a day, and we got to get that message out.
Yeah, I'll just add, before we got started, John, you and Mike and I were talking about this very topic, and the comment that I said is, you know, if you send that message, you know, it's a poor message, because it's not that all Americans are sitting without a job right now. There's many people that are still collecting a paycheck, and that's exactly what we're trying to do here, and that Lauren's trying to do, and many others in this industry are trying to, you know, keep people in their seats, keep people paychecks coming. If you send that message, you know, that's unfortunate. Now, there's obviously people that can't pay, but we know who those people are, and maybe those people aren't, you know, don't have employment right now. Those aren't the people we're trying to communicate with. Those aren't the people, our job's not to bother the ones that can't afford it. So, but we have, you know, good tools to be able to determine who has the ability to pay, and those are the people we want to talk to.
Well said. I wanted to make a comment that Christy Barger from Cornerstone Support sent in a note that they are starting to see states extend renewal filing deadlines. Cornerstone is keeping up with this and is updating its website as information is received. So you can go to Cornerstone Support's website to get information on which states have done that. So thank you, Christy, for sharing that. Another question that's come in, do any of you believe agencies that provide extended business office or first party services will be considered in essential services for the purposes of state business closure mandates, I guess, especially as it pertains to the healthcare industry and a lot of those companies or hospitals and facilities being able to stay open? Does anybody have any opinion on that?
My opinion, yes. half of our businesses. So, no, but believe it or not, I mean, just over the past 3 days, I think we've had 5 or 6 major healthcare facilities across the country. In fact, one we're doing right now, they're all of their business office calls are going to come directly to us. Their staff is being asked to work in other areas of the hospital, and or can't work at all. So we're actually in a pretty good place, and we're actually still hiring people because we know that this could last a while. And so we're answering all sorts of questions, scheduling appointments, not just collecting dollars. So in that case, yes, I would say we're definitely exempt from that.
I would just add, I think it really depends on your operations. Like, look closely to what the work, firstly, what kind of clients do you have? And kind of like to what Tim said, what services are you providing to them to really determine if you can fall under any of the state's exceptions? So it's really, I would say, look at it on a case-by-case basis and look at it specific to your operations and the services that you're providing to your specific clients to figure out if you can make an argument that, hey, yes, our activities fall under these exceptions.
You know, the other thing that I was just looking at here, Mike, is that some of these state orders are drafted in ways that are narrow enough not to shut down business, but to stop the public gathering of people, right? And that's really an important distinction. And it's one that is another message that industry, not just our industry, but across all industries, need to be making to lawmakers and particularly governors of states to say, hey, look, we understand that you don't want people sitting next to each other in a big restaurant, but don't tell the restaurant they can't stop cooking or they have to stop cooking because they've got all kinds of other ways to run their businesses that don't require people to gather, right? And so to the extent some of these orders here, when we reread them, they're careful, some of them, to make sure that it doesn't actually stop business. It stops the public gathering of people. And to the extent your business is, you know, promotes the public gathering of people to coming into big offices, okay, fine. But there are some of these orders that carve out teleworking, for example. They specifically, you know, carve out work at home. If you're doing that, you're not shut down. Don't worry. Which is, again, why with this big push, Lauren and Tim, to, you know, to deploy a remote workforce like you're doing, because many of these orders are not prohibiting that kind of work.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And that's why it's so imperative to read them carefully, and not to just rely on the news, actually go to the order itself and read it.
Even I'm not a lawyer, and even I, when I read the governor of Pennsylvania's order, it clearly says this does not apply to virtual work or telework or working from home. So even I, as a lawyer, could sort of, you know, read between those lines and understand what he was saying. Another question that's interesting, I'm going to ask it. I think I know the answer to it, but I just want to make sure. Do we dare suggest to the consumer to use the $1,000 or $2,000 that the government is going to be sending to pay their debts, much like tax returns? Anyone want to tackle
I would jump in and say, I remind us all to remember the opportunity we have here as an industry. And if we want to change that perception about us, you know, we need to be very smart about the talk offs we use going forward, and making sure that we are being sensitive to what's going on. So I would lean on the side of probably not the best idea.
Now, let me make another suggestion, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all, Lauren, but we are in an unprecedented time now where workout arrangements are better than they've ever been. Debt reduction opportunity is potentially better than it's ever been. Payment plans can potentially be created better than they've ever been. And so now is the time in which debt collectors can help consumers more faster today than in, you know, any time in recent history. And so to the extent consumers are educated about financial literacy, to the extent they understand what they're doing and they're not being tricked or coerced into something, consumers may very well be able to take advantage of unprecedented resolution options that they might have today that they didn't have 2 months ago, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, right? Which is all the more reason why preventing debt collectors from communicating with consumers right now would cause more harm than good, I think, to consumers. I think we just need to change the message a little bit, the content of those calls.
Well said. An interesting question or discussion point. Clients, you know, there are clients out there that might not be able to weather this storm and may be going out of business or may need those collection dollars to kind of keep the lights on. So I'm curious how you would recommend sort of, you know, managing that relationship with clients and especially when they might need those dollars.
Yeah, I'll jump in. I mean, we've seen, you know, we've had a number of requests from clients. I shouldn't say a number. We've had some clients that have asked us to stop during this time. Again, being in healthcare, I think it's a little different. And, you know, the one thing that we're trying to get them not to do that and educate them on some of the reasons we've talked about today, why it's important for us to be able to communicate. They're just not wanting more so the outbound calls, but want us to still take the inbound calls. They are, you know, they're pushing for dollars, but in healthcare, bad debt dollars doesn't mean a whole lot to them when it comes down to it.
I would share that it's all about partnership. You got to partner. You're in a partnership with each and every one of your clients. And so now more than ever, it's really critical to be in talking to your clients and understanding how you can support them during this time. And that may look different client by client. Just like Tim said, some clients are saying, hey, suspend your activities. Other clients are like, hey, we're shutting down and we're relying on you completely. You have other clients that are like, we're trying to keep some state, some semblance of normalcy, please keep going, but be sensitive. So it really is time to be communicating with your clients and making sure that you are providing the services that is best for them and for their set of consumers in this climate.
Yeah, I'll just add to that. One more comment on that is we are sending, you know, I mentioned daily communication to our employees, but we're also sending daily communication to our clients. And the communication we're sending out today is to all of our clients, not all of our clients credit report, but we're asking those that are credit reporting, we're recommending that we stop credit reporting and or place all of their current credit reports with a comment or a marking it as AW, which is something we just learned about, which is a natural disaster. And so it takes less pressure on the credit reports and for the time being. And any policy change that we've done, including working remotely, all of these policies that we put in place are 30-day policies. We will relook at those in 30 days from now. But I don't want all these people to get home and think that they're going to stay home from working. So I just want to comment and make sure that you understand that I think that's a good way to handle some of these major changes.
This question came in first, and I've saved it to last because I think it's a good one. How are you staying focused at this time? I've been trying to monitor compliance but I keep getting sucked into the updates on what's going on around the world. I'm curious how anybody, how each of you are doing that these days.
You know, I got to say, you know, when things are really, really busy and I'm feeling the stress of having to produce and to get work done and to, you know, I long for the days in which things slow down and I can take a breather and I can sort of, you know, regroup, right? Well, this week has been a week for me that I felt, oh, okay, I'm going to get to regroup. That project that I've been meaning to do for a couple of weeks now, I'm going to get to. I'm going to finish this thing I started a week ago that I haven't really gotten back to yet. And I think to myself, right now is the time that I've been hoping for a long time in order for me to get things done. But Mike, I have been more damn distracted this week than I have been in I don't know how many weeks.
I'm trying not to call you too much.
Yeah, I think I have gotten less done in the last week than I have in the last several weeks. And it's because of all this changing, you know, our email inboxes are blowing up. Our cell phones are blowing up with messages. We're all, you know, I'm trying to keep my hand or at least my eyes on everything that's happening, which is changing every day. And it has been a total distraction. I will say that one of the things I'm very, very proud of, at least in our office, and I know you, Tim, and Lauren are proud about in your office, is that you work with great people, right? And it's the great people that makes the whole boat float. And it's no different in my office. We've got great people. Our ship is sailing. And that's how I'm able to get things done here at the office. But I've been so damn distracted. And I go to home at night thinking to myself, okay, tomorrow I'm really going to do what I want to do. And then suddenly I get to the work and, you know, and I'm distracted and I'm off in another direction. And so I don't think I'm alone there. But I can't, you know, it's a little bit frustrating that all the time that I've yearned for is right now, and I'm getting less done now than I do when things are different.
Agreed.
I can share what I've been doing, at least for my role within my organization. It's really important to obviously for legal to stay up to date on the updates. So what I've been doing is keeping a log of all the updates, and I log it and I move on. And so that's really kind of helped me just put things into perspective. Okay, I recorded it, I understand it, and then let me get back to what I was doing. And so that's been helpful. And then also I have been trying to track my time literally on my Outlook calendar to make sure that I'm not losing sight of the regular day-to-day things and allocating time to do that. If I didn't do that, I get it is so easy to get distracted in this environment. It takes some discipline.
Yeah. Well, first thing I'm going to say is I'm blaming the coronavirus on John. He said that he was hoping for this time. And so he's now has this time. So this is all you on you, John. So, you know, I remember it feels like 3-4 weeks ago, but it was just this past Tuesday getting done with the day and thinking, man, it's only Tuesday. Yeah. It feels like it's been a month. My number one goal throughout all this has been to take care of what I say is our family. And that is all of the staff here and our clients, of course. And that's why our communication has been so important. I'm very fortunate to have just a stellar group of fellow leaders in this company that are, you know, acting on the things that need to be done from the compliance standpoint, making changes to workflows, and dialer campaigns and all of this stuff. And, you know, I just, you know, am very happy and proud and also trying to take care of those people to make sure, you know, beyond work life has changed dramatically this past week, week and a half, but so has home life. Mm-hmm. And so you usually at the end of the day, you think, okay, now I can at least go home and get back to kind of a normal routine. But no, we're not in a normal routine, and we probably won't be for a while. So I think, you know, what I told my staff also from the leadership team is we got to treat people. This is more importantly now is to stay calm. And when you're out on the floor, when you're interacting with people, the staff is looking to us. And you got to stay strong during these times. If you show fear, they're going to fear. They don't necessarily have people at home to look up to. So if every day I can get one person to have less fear, that's a success. And that's, I think, what I'm trying to do within our office. So, because you can't do it outside the office, you're not allowed to talk to anybody.
We did get one more question that came in. So before I wrap up, can the special comment code of AW be used for all accounts that are credit reported, or just when a national emergency type forbearance is processed?
And I don't have that answer right now. I in fact, have our compliance team looking at it. So, somebody, a fellow agency owner, sent that to me yesterday and asked it what knowledge I had of it. So we're looking into that. My understanding is, yes, we can move all current credit reported accounts to that AW and then remove that when we feel things have calmed down.
Got it. Excellent. Well, I did want to acknowledge there were a few questions, Tim and Lauren, that came in from people asking for your remote work policies. I will ask you offline. Okay. If you're willing to share that, and if you are, we can deal with that. But I didn't want to put you on the spot and make you say yes or no in front of everybody, especially if you're on video. So with that, we've run out of time. We're over our hour, so I'm going to wrap up. I want to thank Tim, Lauren, John. This was an amazing discussion. Thank you so much for your participation, your perspectives. Also want to thank VOAPS one more time, www.voaps.com. For sharing, for sponsoring today. Special, want to mention again that Todd mentioned the donation of 1 million voicemail messages. So go to their website to find out more about that. Thanks everybody who asked questions. I think we got to most of them. If we didn't, reach out to me and I'll do my best. We've got more webinars coming up next week about this. So this is something we're staying on top of and trying to do my best. I say our, like there's a bunch of people here. It's just me. Trying to do my best to keep everybody as updated as possible. So with that, I'm going to let everybody go. Panel, awesome job. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, keep Mike. Up the take good care, work. Guys.
Good stuff. All right, everybody. Take care. Stay safe. Enjoy your weekend. We'll be back soon. Take care.